The Sean Green Show. Sean covers all things entertainment.
Movies, books, news, concerts, television, video games.
The entertainment guru. Sean covers it all. This is the Sean Green Show podcast. The Sean Green Show podcast on WGN Plus and SeanGreenShow.com.
All right, and thank you guys for joining me here on the Sean Green Show, Instagram live feed, and podcast. Make sure you guys check me out, Sean Green Show Official on Instagram. And if you're looking at this right now, you're already there. But also check out SeanGreenShow.com and Sean Green Show Media on Facebook. And you can check me out on WGNPlus.com if you want to check all the other stuff out, too. Got a jam-packed show for you today, but I'm really excited today because I've been kind of teasing this a little bit online, and she's finally here. Sophia Chase, professional dominatrix and owner of Chicago Dungeon Rentals. You can check her out on Twitter as Domina Sophia, and on Facebook is Mistress Sophia. Thank you for joining me.
Hello. Oh, I'm glad to finally be here in person.
I know, because I believe I talked to you before like a while back, and we had a nice little conversation. And I really wanted to get you like in front of me so I can kind of get a chance to actually know the real you. And one of the things that people always ask me, especially when I had you on last time, mm-hmm. was how does one become a dominatrix? And is this a lifestyle or is this mm-hmm. something that people do, you know, on the side? Is this mm-hmm. is it something that you always wanted to do?
Well, people do this for a variety of reasons. I would say being a dominatrix professionally is what would be categorized as sex work. Mm-hmm. It's in the erotic industry. It's done to turn people on. We don't have sex with our clients, mm-hmm. but, you know, just like, you know, webcam operators don't have sex with their clients. They're still sex workers, too. So people usually have to be a bit unconventional to get into this industry. There aren't formal degrees. There aren't even formal training programs.
Right.
You do kind of an informal mentorship, mm-hmm. and it's either with an individual who's been doing this for a long time, somebody who plays in their personal life, mm-hmm. Or a house, which is a place that has employees and would actually employ dominatrices, and they train you, but they also take a cut of the pay.
Now, you mentioned sex work a couple mm-hmm. Moments ago, and that's one of the things that I've really, that phrase has been used like the past couple of years, and mm-hmm. And it, to me, it seems more normal, especially in my line of work and what I do and the things that I actually cover. But some people look at sex work as kind of a like taboo, and this mm-hmm. is something that you should not do. But you know, as far as sex work, is there any way just to get into it without mm-hmm. actually getting into trouble? Because most people look at sex work as, oh, I gotta go out on the street and do this, that, and the mm-hmm. third, and all that stuff. So
I would say it's a small percentage of sex workers that are street-based workers, so mm-hmm. that usually isn't the case. However, yes, it's taboo. I think people who are drawn to it, like I mentioned, a bit unconventional, interested in human sexuality, and really like being independent business owners. Mm-hmm. We all are self-employed individuals, so you have to like being your own boss mm-hmm. and be good at organizing and everything. And just like any sole proprietorship, you have to know how to do your social media, how to do your computer stuff, how to, of course, do everything in session. That's honestly the easy part. Actually knowing how to run the business from this is the tricky one.
Yeah, and I have that problem myself as far as the business part, because I'm all about the art, and the art is awesome. But when it comes to the business and dealing with people and the money and trying to get everything distributed, that's where the problem lies in, at least for me.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, and you have Chicago Dungeon Rentals, and, mm-hmm. and that... you know, how did that come about? I mean, mm-hmm. how did you get the capital to get all that started and just, you know, make it work?
Mm-hmm. I'm a planner. So I have been saving money. And this opportunity came up where I just couldn't pass it up. It was somebody's private dungeon that wasn't open to the public for couples to rent or anything like that. There were a handful of us who used it for our sessions with clients, mm-hmm. you know, hourly. We'd rent the space. And the woman who owned it wanted to give it up. She was kind of tired of running it, and I had been eyeing it for a long time. And in my mind, you know how some people plan their dream weddings or things like that?
Yeah,
I've always planned my dream dungeon.
Really?
And so even working there, I'm like, oh, I'd move this around and I'd change this, and boy, we could do this, and it'd be really exciting. And so she gave me that opportunity. I already had a business plan.
Really?
You know, and ready to go.
So to this day, do you have your dream dungeon right now?
Oh, I do.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's filed away right up here.
Now, one of the things I always want to know, you know, when you say dominatrix and BDSM and all this stuff, are there different levels to it, or is it all just glob into this one big world?
I would say there's different levels to the type of play people do. BDSM stands for bondage and discipline, domination and submission, and sadism and masochism, for anybody who's not familiar.
Yeah.
And it's an umbrella term for a lot of different stuff. People will put everything from folks who, let's say, have foot or shoe fetishes and feet and shoes really turn them on, to folks who like to get spanked, or to people who like heavy bondage or humiliation. Those are all really different activities. You know, you spank a foot fetishist, they're not very happy. You know, you really got to groove with the person you're playing with. But yeah, it's just a big variety. And a lot of times when folks ask about maybe levels of things, you're thinking about maybe the level of intensity, like things that hurt a lot more than others.
Yeah.
That kind of thing are you thinking of?
Yeah.
So, the sadism and masochism part?
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things I always want to know too, as far as, you know, in your line of work, like, are there any dark sides to it? You know, like things that you be that make you say, you know what, like when you first started, and because I always looked at it like, you know, there has to be like a downside to it, because there's a downside to every job, and I know the downsides to my job and things that I hate about it, but there are more that the good always outweighs the bad. So does that work for you too?
Oh, it always outweighs the bad for me, at least as my situation currently is. Yeah, sex work is really like any other job. Being a dominatrix is like any other job. There are things you love about it and you get excited for, you know, if you're lucky you have a job like that. And everybody has stuff that they dread doing, or maybe that one client who they find a bit annoying or things like that. I'm fortunate that I've been doing this a long time and I can be picky with my clients. I turn down more than half of the people that contact me.
Really?
And only see folks who really interest me, because then we're going to have a genuine connection between each other. My educational background is in social work. I have my master's degree in clinical social work from the University of Chicago. And before becoming a dominatrix full time, I experimented with having a private practice and seeing clients therapeutically that way. And I got to tell you, there's a whole lot of similarities between talk therapy and some of the stuff that I do, or at least the way I practice it.
Now, one of the things that about me, I am like, when I tell people I work in radio and they see me out in a public setting, I'm one of those types. I'm like super quiet, and I kind of ball up in this little, you know, corner, and that's how I am. And so I'm more like an introvert. So do you have that type of personality where you're an introvert, like when you're personally dealing with people, and then when you're actually doing your job, you're being an extrovert? Because I know with me, like, it's just I hate being around people in public settings. I get nervous. I sweat. So does that happen to you too?
Yeah, I think we both have performative aspects to our job.
Yeah.
I'm an introvert as well. I really get to recharge my batteries from being alone and having lots of quiet, alone, thoughtful time, as opposed to big crowds of people. That doesn't do it for me nearly as much. But I know a lot of introverts who are really great performers, because in a way you're controlling a lot more of the factors around you. I don't know about you. It's a little easier for this, even knowing people are watching online and there's tons of eyeballs maybe on us, than it would be in a big crowd at a party.
Yeah.
Having half the number of people having eyeballs on you.
Right.
And you know?
Yeah. So one of the things I always wondered about was the duality in dealing with the sex work and just your personal life, because you do have to kind of have a balance with that. Mm-hmm. So have you, when you first got started, did you have like any troubles just dealing with the duality of doing sex work?
Sure. I think especially women aren't necessarily taught to have really great boundaries, especially growing up. People who are taught to be people pleasers and say yes to everything. Becoming a dominatrix, that is a really big change. You get to say no to everything whenever you want. That's really my current favorite part of the job, is I love saying no to men. It's just it's a fun pastime of mine.
Yeah, really.
Tease and denial, man, all the way. But the duality of it for me, I definitely had times where, you know, I put my energies into things that maybe I shouldn't have with clients just because I didn't know any better. And this is 10 years ago. I've been doing this for over a decade now. And just dumb, naive mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I did a pretty good job of compartmentalizing things mm-hmm. and keeping my work life and my personal life separate. I'm very much myself when I'm a dominatrix.
Mm-hmm.
It's a version of me. But my clients don't see my personal life. My personal life, I rarely talk about my work unless, you know, work something comes up into conversation. You know, I'm safe to have around kids and stuff at family functions. I'm not going to be inappropriate. So I have a really firm separation between the two. However, my whole family and all of my friends know what I do.
Biggest mistake you ever made as a dominatrix?
All right, this is a good story if you want
it. Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
I'll give you at least a funny mistake.
We're going to cue the music.
Let me grab
my drink real quick.
Okay, yeah, you're gonna want to drink.
Okay.
So this is not safe for kids at all here. So probably my first year as a dominatrix, I didn't have my own dungeon yet. I was still a baby dom. And I was working with a client who I knew well, and he had asked for something very uncomfortable to be done to his testicles.
Ooh.
So we had talked a little bit, and he had asked for Bengay just on his scrotum.
Oh.
Yeah, that would be, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Painful. And it was part of a larger scene where we were building up to something that intense.
Yeah.
That wasn't like, walk in, boom,
right,
Bengay
right,
on your
right,
balls.
Right.
No. You know. So there was a build to that. And when I went to the cupboard, I grabbed it. It said, Bengay, put it on him. And 10 minutes later or so, he said, okay, it's actually burning too much now. Can you take it off?
Well, you can't just take that off.
It's very hard to take off. However, I remembered in the cabinet, there was aloe lotion.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, you know, people probably put that on their butt after session. That would probably work for Bengay. Maybe it'll neutralize it a little bit after I wipe it off. Well, I grabbed it, put it on, and he's like, it's getting worse.
Oh, my God.
And I looked at it, and it said pain-relieving cream, which I thought was
right.
Like the aloe stuff. No, pain-relieving cream was generic. Icy hot.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
Just putting more on the poor man's balls.
So when was the ambulance called?
Fortunately, that was not necessary. It was an uncomfortable but perfectly harmless in the end mistake.
Oh,
but that
God.
That one haunts me a little bit. That's really embarrassing.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Like, you know what? You know, just meeting you and just hearing these stories, you know, it totally just opened my mind up. I already have an open mind mm-hmm. already. But, you know, just sitting in front of you and just hearing everything that you had to say just about this line of work, it really just, I hope that people that are watching this and that are hearing this, you know, they're looking at it in a totally different light now, because mm-hmm. One of the things that people always say, especially in the Me Too era, and
mm-hmm.
I don't want to diminish anything about that. Have you, like, in the Me Too era, is that like with being a dominatrix
mm-hmm.
And just doing sex work in general, has that had an effect on you?
I'm sorry, in what sense?
Like in a sense where, you know, like some women look at sex workers as they hold women back, you know, as it's not empowering,
uh-huh.
you know, so.
Ah, yeah.
So do you get that at all?
That was long before Me Too. There's always been people who... Some people who are very, very focused on anti-trafficking things will sometimes conflate consensual sex work,
mm-hmm.
like what I do or people might do at strip clubs, anyone who applies for the job and wants it and isn't being coerced, they'll conflate that with human trafficking and things that really are disempowering, right, torture, illegal, and wrong. I'm choosing to be here, and I would just hope that people would acknowledge that, and I'm not necessarily an exception there. There's a lot of people who choose sex work for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
Certainly the schedule works way better for me. I have lupus, I have a chronic illness, and I'm tired all the time. Taking, you know, less than 10 hours of sessions a week so that I can rest allows me to stay healthy.
Right, and you're up here with me, and you can be sleeping right now. And
I could be, Sean. I had a good time a few years ago. That's why I'm back.
Yeah, and I also, like I said, I appreciate you coming in, and I hope to have you on in the future. Guys, Sophia Grace.
Chase.
Sophia.
I am quite graceful, so I'm okay with that. It is Sophia Chase.
Sophia Chase, professional dominatrix and owner of Chicago Dungeon Rentals. Make sure you guys check out the website. Go to her Twitter. It's Domina Sophia and Mistress Sophia on Facebook and Dominia Sophia on Twitter. And make sure you check out her shop. And thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Sean. This was fun.
Thanks for listening to The Sean Green Show, the entertainment guru. You could friend him on Facebook, Sean Green Show Media, or follow him on Twitter, at Sean Green Show. The Sean Green Show on WGN Plus and SeanGreenShow.com.